favorite scary movie. Have you checked the children?
It's all for you!
We have such sights to show you.
You're gonna say something worthy of intro material.
No, maybe a higher quality drink, but still
something with more actual mango.
Yeah, you know, to make it special, I actually made these myself and sliced little bits of mango inside the thing.
Then I would have been really sad, and then yeah. I would have been like, Anthony,
this tastes delicious.
This tastes delicious, but now I'm going to break out in hives.
And we need to go record in a hospital bed.
I need to go get a shot.
You know the great thing about the mango inside the thingy is they all float. Ah!
That was a horrible...
No. Can we just start anyways?
Yes.
Yeah. So bad.
That was a horrible...
That was really bad.
This is season three. This is season three, and this is what you decided to do?
Leave the whole bit, alright?
Fuck off. Okay, anyway, welcome back, everyone, to season three of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster.
I'm just downing this now. Hey, what's up,
with
everybody?
With me, as always, is Anthony Fuentes, with coming in with the absolutely ridiculous segues.
Yeah, no, that was I purposely bad, I'm going to say.
Was that purposely bad?
No.
Yeah. I was, like, trying to think of, like we're going to talk about...
I could have done a voice or something, you know?
You know what I was going to think? My personal segue was going to be, like, we were still going to be talking about the event, and I was going to be like, speaking of clowns...
Oh, hey. That would have been good, too. That would have been better.
I mean, it was better.
Now we're
than...
here anyways, now.
We still got here. Anyway, guys, welcome to season three. I hope you guys missed us as much as we missed you, because... Good God.
Yeah.
We miss you.
Yeah, right. But you know what? I gotta say, our break in between is not nearly as chaotic and bad as last year's break.
Was it chaotic last year?
Last year, I feel like when we came back from season two, we were like, what the fuck happened? But, you know, the world's been crazy enough.
It's true. I think it was just like, it was a nice break. Because also July was just like a bit of a mess.
Yeah.
For me.
The shit came early. That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah. And now I'm kind of just settling back into things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got a new job.
See? That's right.
Yeah.
Everything's so, turning out, you know.
It's all coming up.
Coming up Millhouse. Exactly. And then I don't know.
You're keeping on.
Yeah, I don't know what. Again, I'm super in that zone where I'm like, something's gonna drop. Why is this going too good?
I you know what? I was talking about that in therapy. I was just like, now that everything's like over, I'm like waiting. I'm like,
yeah,
what's gonna fucking happen?
Yeah, please,
now?
Come on. What problem do I have? Like? Oh, no problems. I've all the things I've been doing to mitigate problems have been working. Why? What? That never happens.
Anyway, enough about us. We'll talk a little bit about our break probably throughout the episode.
Yeah,
but,
definitely.
We are talking about, it's supposed to be an episode we covered at the end of last season, but I think it's just as poignant to do it for the opening of season three.
Yes, exactly. Never mind our own personal errors about not being able to get it done. Still good.
I like how he's like taking the blame for like he's like making it like a both of us problem. It was a me problem. It was 100% a me problem. It was my own personal issues about why I couldn't get it done. This is a hard as shit episode to write.
It would have been tough anyways. Exactly.
There's so much material. We are talking about Stephen King's It from 1990.
Oh, shit. Bringing it back to the 90s. Parachute pants, Stephen King adaptations that are...
Galore. Like, Stephen King adaptations out the fucking wazoo.
Oh, my gosh. Exactly. And, of course, IMDb came out in the 90s and they gave us a synopsis. So let's check that bitch out.
That was another...
Segway.
Another wonderful segue
right?
by one Mr. Anthony Fuentes.
So... In 1960, seven preteen outcasts fight an evil demon who poses as a child-killing clown. 30 years later, they reunite to stop the demon once and for all when it returns to their hometown. Reading is harder when you come off a break.
What are words?
I'm just like, I normally read that much faster. Whoa, that says hometown.
We're also drinking.
Yeah, that's true.
Also... dear listeners, if you hear my air conditioner in the background, mind your business.
Mm-hmm. It's fucking hot.
We're in the middle of a fucking heat wave right now. By the time you listen to this, hopefully the heat wave will be over.
But by the time you listen to this, there also might be a wildfire or something.
Right.
It is that time.
It is that time of year.
Or an earthquake. Who the fuck knows? 2020. Anything can happen.
Yeah, apparently I learned we are due for an asteroid right around the time of the election, which
that's
I'm just
right.
like, I'm... Life is a fucking nightmare. But yeah, so if you hear my AC...
And it hit DC, what?
What a coincidence!
No incumbents!
Yeah, if you hear my air conditioner, it's because it's really, really hot, and I don't really want to get disgustingly sweaty while recording this episode.
That's okay. Opener be damned. This will be the whole month of September you're feeling that one. But anyways, this was based, of course, on a book novel by Stephen King.
Of course.
Written by Lawrence D. Cohen and Tommy Lee Wallace, who was a mainstay of this podcast, of course, and directed by the one and only Tommy Lee Wallace, who made a film that we both didn't agree on the quality of. Season of the Witch.
Yes, I was like, I know what it is. I know the title. I know what movie it is. And I'm like, I wanted to say Season of the Witch. But I didn't want to be wrong.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if that same disparity will show itself in this one, but we'll find out. So... Starring Harry Anderson, Dennis Christopher, a good in the first two first name club.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. Richard Masur, Richard. Annette O'Toole, Tim Reed, John Ritter.
Classic 70s, 80s, 90s
mm-hmm.
staple John Ritter.
John Ritter and Tim Reed, both good boys. Richard Thomas, another two first namer. There we go. And of course, the GOAT, Tim Curry.
Tim motherfucking Curry!
I fucking love this motherfucker. Anyways, this was budgeted at, of course, $12 million, which seems like a lot for a TV movie. Jesus.
For a 19. Britannia agrees.
She's just like, $12 million? Are you fucking kidding me?
I've also been away all weekend, so she might start crying, and for that I do apologize. She has a lot of opinions.
She's like, Tim Curry, fuck yeah.
I'll pick you up. I don't give a fuck. You can sit in my lap.
Yeah, come on.
You just have to let me pick you up. Fuck you!
She's like, man.
Come here.
Start talking about Tim Curry again.
Continue.
And of course, this no real box office information because this was originally released on ABC on November 18th through November 20th, 1990. We picked a TV movie to open up our season 3. That's pretty good. But of course, this bitch is based on a book, which Senorita Webster here is going to let us know all about.
Hell yeah.
Coming up.
Stephen King. So, written in 1986, it is King's 22nd book and 17th published novel under his own name, because as we all know, he published a couple of novels under a pseudonym.
What was the pseudonym again?
Richard Bachman. Yeah,
I thought I was going to say Bryan Cranston.
No, wrong. And as many of you probably can guess at this point, this was written at the tail end of his drug and alcohol addiction before he decided to start getting help for said addiction shortly after the release of Cujo in 1981.
Oof, and for more on that particular section of his life, check our episode on Misery. Of course, directed by Rob Reiner. And Cujo we will get to eventually.
Yes. Because
that's going to be a Carpenter-King combo.
Oh.
And that'll be fun because that movie's chaos.
So the novel is told through various narratives, alternating between two periods, and is largely told in the third person omniscient. I'm used to omnipotence. So it just knows everything.
In the impotence.
No. But it deals with themes that eventually became King's staples. The power of memory, childhood trauma, and its reoccurring echoes into adulthood. And overcoming evil through mutual trust and sacrifice.
Oh, wow. Yes. All those things. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
I mean, you know, I haven't seen Stand By Me, but I understand that's what it's about.
Mm-hmm. That's the, without clowns, it's this movie, and better.
King has stated that he first conceived the story in 1978 and began writing in 1981. He finished writing the book in 1985. So Cocaine Steve came up with the story, but Sober Steve wrote parts of it. I think.
Okay. I think so, Cocaine Steve may have written some of it.
Yes. Based off of my timeline here that I kind of put together, because I basically pulled up his books, like all of the timeline of his books, and I was like, okay, so if he started getting help technically right after Cujo came out, but he didn't start writing this until around that time anyway. Like he came up with the story beforehand. I'm like, okay. Yes. And also, I don't think a sober person could have come up with this story.
No, I don't think so either. Not with like the original novel with like the gangbang and
No.
What if they all have to go to adulthood by banging this chick?
By the way, I was reading stuff for this, I saw this, like, they were just, like, framing it as, like, fun trivia. And it was like, they were like, oh, an important part left out of the movie was how all of the boys lost their virginity to Beverly. And I was like, oh, interesting. And I'm like, wait, they're talking about the gangbang!
Yes, that's right.
And I was like, I don't like that's how they phrased it.
Remember,
that
is also post-Cosmic Turtle.
Yes.
So, different movie. Had it been more faithfully adapted.
Well, we're about to get into that because here's the thing. The book was released in December of 1986, and at the time, it was King's longest book to date, a whopping 1,138 pages.
Which I read in high school.
You read the whole thing?
I did. It was, you know how they used to have that silent reading time where it was like, yeah, for 20 minutes everybody a day in your English class, you read.
Yeah.
Yeah, I decided half of my senior year would be tackling Stephen King's It. In 20-minute increments.
Did you finish it?
I did. Wow. Yeah, I did. Because, you know, like, you read slow when you're like, oh, okay, this part's boring. When it's fast, it's like, the 20 minutes is over?
It's true.
When it's good.
I did. I had the same thing. And I was reading a science fiction book called There Will Be Dragons by John Ringo, which is one of my dad's favorite authors.
Oh, okay.
And my dad, like, bestowed the book upon me. He was like, you might like this. And it was like...
You're like, this is about Imagine Dragons? No.
Imagine Dragons was barely a thing when I was in high school. I'm not that young. Also, it's like this dumb... Well, it's not dumb science fiction, but it's a kind of science fiction that has math in it. Like...
Oh.
Like, he's that...
Of course your dad would love it.
It's that kind of nerd where I was just like, great. But anyway, the book, is second only to The Stand when it comes to length. Like,
makes sense. The Stand, they don't even do movies. They're just like, TV show. Cool.
Well, The Stand had a movie.
Was it
a movie? It's the one with Kathy Bates in it, right?
Maybe. I thought that was like a mini-series in the same vein. Yeah.
It might have been a mini-series, but I do remember they did the same thing. Like, they gave it the It treatment where they basically, when they released it, they combined it into like one very, very, very long movie.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
Because I remember my mom showing it to me because the opening where everyone's dying of this plague, it's Don't Fear the Reaper.
Yes, yes.
And I remember just like being like, this is the coolest shit.
It's like rock and roll.
Ever. Well, that was the first time I ever heard the songs, and I just fucking loved the song.
I love when that shit happens. You're like, well, this is defining what my life now, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And my mom was just like, interesting that this is what imprints on your memory, and I was just like, fuck yeah. So, the novel received mixed reviews at best at the time of its release, described as, quote, by turns boring and shocking, and, quote, one of King's most frustrating and perplexing books, unquote.
I think reading it at, like, the adolescent age, I was just kind of, like, identifying with the kids a little bit, because I was also a very immature high schooler.
Really?
Oh, definitely.
Interesting. And then, 3 years later, after the resounding success of Pet Sematary, 1989, listen to our episode about that.
Unless you really like that movie because we shit on it.
It's true!
For like 90 minutes. And you know what? We got our biggest amount of like listens and follows when we said we're hyping up that episode. And I remember I'm like, fuck, we're going to shit on all these new listeners.
They're all so excited. And then we just swoop in and we're just like, I still can't think of one redeemable thing I liked about that movie.
No, not TV movie film star Dale Midkiff and his ability to act beyond a jar of mayonnaise.
The guy who was also the judge in My Cousin Vinny.
Yeah. Oh, he was amazing.
That's the only thing.
Yes.
Only redeemable thing. But his character was dog shit.
He was great though.
Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly.
He carried Dale Midkiff.
Britannia yes. And Drake.
She's just like, are you talking about TV movie?
TV movie actor Dale Minkiff? Dale Minkiff?
What?
God.
Yeah, no, he's horrible. I get it.
So Hollywood wanted more of King's works to be adapted, and several adaptations were greenlit, including this one.
Yes, of course. Now, for some reason, obviously, they didn't want to put it in theaters, but...
Production is long as shit, by the way.
Let's just go through it. Let's do it. All right, so... ABC had acquired the rights to a TV miniseries of It, for what would be the first made-for-TV film based on a Stephen King work, since Salem's Lot, directed by Tobe Hooper, who we covered again at the end of the season finale.
It's just all coming just together.
In. By the way, again, thanks to Andrew for coming in and guest hosting and doing a killer job, man.
Yeah.
Fucking appreciate it. Anyways, so Lawrence D. Cohen, who had previously written the 1976 film Carrie, was hired to write It. Like, if you hear scratching like a motherfucker, this cat is wanting some attention right now.
She is really just, like, one of those, like, she's one of the little war dudes. The war boys from,
Continue the reference.
Charlize Theron. She has a shaved head.
Mad Max Fury Road.
Which
we just referenced a second ago.
Yes.
Off
of the Witness Me thing.
Yes.
That's why I was continuing the reference, and I was like, it's fucking Mad Max.
Tom Hardy!
Also, his name escaped me. The sun, like, fries your brain cells.
Yeah.
When it's, like, over 90
degrees. This California sun's
degrees.
A piece of shit, too. Yeah. And I live in an oven.
You do. You live in a brick oven.
Did buy a second fan though. It's been killer.
Wow.
Been awesome. Yeah.
You were
after
living
2 years,
life.
After 2 years, fan number two.
Yeah, with your sealed shut window.
Mm-hmm. According to both Stephen King and Lawrence, Stephen had little to no involvement in writing of the miniseries. George A. Romero had originally been signed on to direct the project as well, but he left due to scheduling conflicts.
Choices.
That would have been cool.
That would have been weird as shit.
I would have been digging that, actually.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm. And with his special effects resume, that could have been awesome.
I mean, the special effects were, like, top
for what
for
it
the
is.
90s.
Yeah, but
for
then
a
again,
TV movie.
But George A. Romero is used to working with shit budgets and making some gold.
True. So imagine giving him $12 million.
I know. He's just like, are you kidding me? This is fucking amazing. So ABC had planned for an 8 to 10 hour series that would run over 4 to 2 hour blocks. Fuck. But after George's departure, ABC condensed it to a three-part series. Shortly after, Tommy Lee Wallace was brought in, of course, to direct. And after Tommy signed on to the project, ABC had ultimately decided to condense the film to two parts.
Like, they just kept cutting and cutting and cutting.
Who's used to dealing with studio bullshit? You know what? Let's push him around. Tommy Lee Wallace.
Yeah.
Human punching bag, Tommy Lee Wallace. No. So according to writer Lawrence, quote, speaking candidly, ABC was always nervous about It. Primarily the fact that it was in the horror genre, but also the 8-to-10-hour commitment. They loved the piece, but lost their nerve in terms of how many hours they were willing to commit. Eventually, they agreed to a 2-night, 4-hour commitment. End quote. So, given the length of the It novel, which, of course, once again, runs a whopping 1,138 pages.
It's too long.
Shit. A great deal of material was, of course, left out of Lawrence's adaptation, including subplots concerning the personal lives of the adult characters.
Oh,
it
and
might
also,
not be a bad...
also the child orgy.
Yeah, and the child orgy, yes, and the turtle.
And the turtle, yeah. A lot of big plot points that everyone loves to bring up. They're like, they left out the child orgy. I'm like, would you rather they left it in?
Yeah.
Would you
on
rather?
ABC?
On ABC, right?
Yeah,
like,
on TV. Like, you know, they cut the third hour. I'm sorry.
Or even, like, the remake, like, the ones listed, where I'm just like, you want that? You really?
You want to see fucking Finn Wolfhard taking his time, huh, dude? Is that how it is?
Well, that's the thing. It's like, there's so many, like, creepy adult women who think he's, like, hot, and it creeps me out.
He's a goddamn child, man.
He is so young. He is a baby, and I'm like, please stop.
Even now, he's like a not legal teenager.
He's like 17.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chill your shit. It's fine, dude. You get plowed by Finn Wolfhard in like a year or two. You're good.
Not even that. I'm like, don't be that creepazoid.
Jesus.
Jesus. Cut off your own fingers. Like, come on.
Yeah. Anyways, so, another quote here. I can't even begin to enumerate my favorite scenes from the novel that we had cut, because there were so many of them, Lawrence reflected. I look at it as a glass half full situation. There are scenes in both nights that... In both nights?
Like, both, because the movie...
Oh, nights and TV, that's right, right. In both nights that were created by Steve on the page, I'm delighted that they survived. Like the fortune cookie scene and adult Beverly going to her childhood house. The way I see it, the best moments from the novel made the cuts, and the rest are casualties of war. Yeah, okay.
I mean,
no, that makes
sense.
I
agree.
Yeah, I think you gotta be smart with this kind of stuff. And
there's no, like, tangible way to condense, like, over 1,000 pages of content into 3 hours.
No. I mean, think of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. That's over 1,000 pages, and they didn't, like... It's the shortest Harry Potter movie, huh? Did you like that? Did you like to not have Harry's development actually fully show? Sorry, I got a little Harry Potter thing right there. Just
had to.
Order of the Phoenix is my favorite book.
That's not my favorite book.
Oh, wait. It's my second favorite book. My favorite is Goblet of Fire. Yeah, Goblet of Fire is the shit. Voldemort returns in that book.
Mine's Prisoner of Azkaban.
Okay, that's a really good book.
Well, actually, that's my favorite movie. It's not my favorite book. My favorite book is Order of the Phoenix.
It's my second favorite movie. I would say Deathly Hallows Part 1 is my favorite movie.
Interesting. I haven't watched any of them in so long that, like, I could not fucking tell you.
When I lived back with my parents and, like, ABC Family, we had access to every Harry Potter weekend. That's right. Every Harry Potter weekend.
Preach it.
She's just like, what on ABC Family?
She's like, what? Mother does not let us.
She didn't even buy ABC Family on the package.
Fuck that shit.
But they are on HBO Max.
I.
And you got the fancy TV. I'm just saying. I'm just saying, you can do it.
I could. I could.
Yeah,
I won't.
You could
but
totally
I could.
Do it. You can do it.
You know what I did over my break?
What?
I watched so many new horror movies.
Oh,
like,
you did.
For fun.
That's right.
I was watching horror movies for fun.
Not it being our job. You did it on your own.
I did it for fun. So good. Haunt is fucking amazing.
I still need to watch it.
Fucking amazing. It's gruesome.
You know, Shudder has some good shit, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. I like
it. Has. I think it's improved over the past, like, couple of years.
Well, see, the thing is with it, like, whenever I use the TV function, you're like, whatever's on, you can watch.
Mm-hmm.
I always find gold.
That's how I watched Hell House LLC the first time.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that I watched, it was like some Italian giallo horror film.
I clicked on it, like, just on accident, and then I just got sucked into the movie.
Yeah.
And I, like, literally, like, I was just like, oh, I have to.
Well, I remember watching this Italian film. I forget what it's called, like, Loveless or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, Quentin Tarantino stole all these shots. Like, that was my first thought. I'm like, well, now I have to keep watching to see what the same framing is for Kill Bill now.
We're never going to get through this episode.
No, we're not. We're totally good. We have pages. Anyways, let's go to it. So, that being said, Tommy and Lawrence retained the centrality of Pennywise in the source novel. As noted by film scholar Tony, name here, Magistrale. Magistrale?
I don't know. I'm just
Tony Magistrale in Hollywood's.
Why did you come Borat?
I don't know. I thought that was going more Italian.
My life.
In Hollywood.
That's what you sounded like. This is my life. All right,
that's two claws in. It's fine. Stephen King. In Hollywood, Stephen King, the made for TV film retains the quote association between the adult world of Derry and. It is further established in the masterful choice of a carnival clown as a unifying symbol for the various creatures representing the monster.
Dun, dun, dun.
I think that's a smart way to go about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was fucking brilliant.
I think that transferred well in the remake.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. It made it for an iconic fucking character.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because the book is a little more all over the place when it comes to that kind of stuff.
Interesting.
Yeah. But when it came to casting... It was surprisingly quick and intentional because this is television. They know their shit.
And they're just like, we know who we want.
Mm-hmm. They're like, how much money? No. Studio, they're like, yeah, you have so many millions of dollars. Take your time. We just got hit summer. And then it's like, okay, hurry up, though. We got hit summer. TV, they're just like, no. Get your shit together.
Yeah, this came out in November. Like, this is such a weird time to release a horror film.
After Halloween.
Like,
insane.
Immediately after.
Insane. So, of course, the majority of the adult actors in the miniseries, including John Ritter, Dennis Christopher, Tim Reed, motherfucker, and Harry Anderson, were hand-chosen by Tommy and Lawrence for their roles. That's interesting. Annette O'Toole was cast in the miniseries at the suggestion of Ritter, with whom she had recently shot the Dreamer of Odds, the L. Frank Baum story. Okay.
I have no idea what that is, but I was like, sure.
Whatever. Quote, I think John may have talked to somebody because I got an offer to play Beverly, end quote. Okay. Annette recalled, it happened really fast. I don't think I even went in for a reading. I was living in Oregon at the time, and next thing I knew, I was in Vancouver hanging out with the coolest, most fun guys of all time. 90s, what?
The coolest, most fun guys.
These guys were hip.
When they were with it.
Yep, everything was radical and cowabunga. God damn it. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
I understood.
Yeah, no, it came out the same time this did. 1990. Yeah.
God.
Yeah.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
God, that movie was the shit. Anyways, Emily Perkins of Ginger Snaps fame and Marlon Taylor, who played the young Beverly Marsh, and Mike Hanlon were cast out of Vancouver, while Seth Green, our boy, and Jonathan Brandis were cast out of Los Angeles for the parts of young Richie Tozier and Bill Denebro.
Whatever his name is.
Denbro.
Point
Denbro.
Is, great cast of kids.
Yeah, dude, Seth Green was, and this is like pre... Seth Green's the shit.
I
know. He's amazing.
This is where we're going to talk about how great Seth Green is. But like, bro,
loves Seth Green. She's like,
she's just like her mom.
She's watched Buffy with you.
Yeah, she totally gets it. Also, like every time, like anytime Robot Chicken's on, I'm just like, it's Seth Green.
Brittany is like, what? What are they parodying today?
Oh, I love Seth Green though.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Yeah.
What do you call it? Austin Powers. I have a soft spot for... Oh, that makes you be quiet, huh? She's not an Austin Powers fan.
She's not.
She's not. She's like, fuck, Austin, Mike Myers. but no, I actually, the first two Austin Powers have been special play. That I saw that in theaters with my family. So, you know, and Seth Green was the shit in that also. So.
See, there you go.
Mm-hmm. Staple of the 90s. Anyways, of course... We had to cast a motherfucking clown. So, according to Lawrence, he had written the script for the series without a specific actor in mind for the role of the iconic Pennywise. According to director Tommy Lee Wallace, before he was attached to the project, Malcolm McDowell and Roddy McDowell were in consideration to play Pennywise, but Tommy wanted Tim Curry for the role. Malcolm McDowell would have been interesting.
I don't know how. I mean, it would have been a very different role for sure.
I can see the voice, but I cannot see the face. Like, I can see him being like Malcolm, like, fucking. Guy can't even do the voice.
Oh, no, no, no.
No.
Ever.
No, that's too hard.
Okay, yes. I was just like, am I picturing the right person? Okay, yes.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
Yeah, no.
His face is too angular. I can't.
Well, that's the thing, though, is like, I think. Obviously, we're comparing this to Mr. Curry, but it would have been a much more menacing clown.
Yeah, I'm thinking like A Clockwork Orange, Malcolm McDowell, is like that little like just like that weird sadisticness to him.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. He would have been significantly scarier.
See. In a way that's not like Tim Curry has like a very uncanny valley way of presenting.
Absolutely, like I think they're both very very scary in their own right. But Tim Curry, thank you, Britannia. I do think Tim Curry has like this like dark humor about him that I think Malcolm McDowell would have just been
skipped
like
over.
Yeah, would have absolutely skipped over into straight menacing.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's kind of where my thought process is going too, because Tim Curry he plays it both ways, which makes him more creepy. Like a creepy clown.
Yeah, exactly.
Or Malcolm McDowell's like evil. The evil clown.
Creepy clown versus evil clown.
Yes, yeah, exactly. But Stephen King recalled that there was doubt from the crew about Curry playing Pennywise. Perhaps due to the actor previously being known for comic roles in films like the Rocky Horror Picture Show and, of course, Clue.
Two of my... Well, okay, Rocky Horror Picture Show is, like, it's not, like, one of my favorite, but Clue is one of
Clue's
my absolute favorites. I fucking love Clue.
I fucking agree. However, Wallace wasn't a fan of the other choices, particularly McDowell, as Wallace found him to have too much sweetness to play the... A part like Pennywise.
I'm sure he's talking about Roddy.
He has to be talking about Roddy.
Like,
there's
which,
no way.
Like, which McDowell are we talking about?
No. Yeah, like, don't you think Alex DeLarge of A Clockwork Orange is a sweet dude? Huh?
Oh, man.
Oh, no.
You know, A Clockwork Orange is still one of those movies that, like, I was told when I was a kid that it was too scary for me to watch. And because of that, I internalized it. And I still haven't watched it, even though I'm 25 years old. Because I still, in my head, I'm like, I can't watch it. I'm too young.
You know what? It's one of those ones that's not graphic, but it disturbs me in a very, very, like, weird way that gets me to my core. I don't like it. Like, it fucks me up.
Like,
it's weird.
I mean, so it's a horror film.
No, it's a weird, like, dystopian style film.
Well, that's, I mean, it sounds like you're describing what, like, horror films do to people.
Yeah, but it's like, perverse.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, think of it more like a, I don't know, it's hard to describe. One day, maybe. God damn, it is.
No, I mean, I'm not saying we should cover it. I'm saying, like, you're describing, because, like, there are certain films, like, at the end of it, I have that feeling.
You
like,
got
that
the heebie-jeebies.
Punch. Yeah,
like,
yeah, exactly.
Just,
like, that punch in the gut.
Yeah, but it's just, oh, there's something about it. It's fucking weird. Yeah, the book's pretty good, too. But Curry took the role for the clown's subversive nature, being, quote, both begrudging.
Beguiling.
Beguiling and murderous, and a smile gone bad. Damn.
Beguiling.
Lord
of the day.
Beguiling.
There you go. Anyway.
Fucking Big Bird comes out Pennywise.
Oh.
So Curry used Robin Williams-esque natural improvisation when playing Pennywise, giving the character a Bronx accent in order to sound like, as Curry put it, quote, an old-time Catskills comic, and that's played to very good effect right
the
there.
The whole time, I'm just like, what is going on?
I'm loving that. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So, it, every time we put it in this goddamn
it's,
script,
it
fucks
was
me
very
up.
Hard.
Yeah.
Like, but yeah. It, yeah.
Well, you know.
You know.
Yeah, it's fucking king. Anyways, it was shot over a period of 3 months, fuck me, in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, on a budget of, again, a whopping $12 million, which, if you listen to this podcast, it's kind of a lot, like, especially considering it's a TV movie. Fucking weird.
Hmm.
I mean, it is, like, 4 hours of material, though. I guess that makes more sense.
Yeah.
Chinese restaurant, that's got to be a pricey set. So given that the shooting entailed an adult cast with child counterparts, Tommy sought to have the adult actors meet with the children playing the younger versions of their characters. Quote, we made a point of bringing the adult and children actors together for a couple days, even though it was costly, since the adults and kids have no scenes together. End quote. Like, yeah, fucking Hollywood.
Well, I guess I kind of understand this.
Mm-hmm.
I think they did something similar for the remake.
They did. Yeah, absolutely. But that's like big studio budget right there.
Yes, we're
yeah.
talking like $47
million. Yeah, yeah. Because of the amount of makeup Curry had to have for the role of Pennywise, he had the earliest call time of all the actors. So, yeah. On each shooting day, it took at least 3 hours for him to take off his makeup and get out of his fucking costume.
I mean, just imagine, like, just, like, the hordes of, like, assistants just scrubbing at him with fucking oil-based
and
makeup.
And he's still in character.
Yeah.
He's like, what you doing over there?
His teeth are still in.
Yeah.
I would scream. Oh, my God.
Make sure to be kind to my eyes.
I would be like, no, Mr. Curry.
Stop looking at my fucking face.
Mr. Curry,
try to help you.
I'm sorry.
Because I got a dinner reservation.
I don't like it. I don't like it.
Oh, fuck it, Curry himself, of course, had fear of clowns, so his contract for working on the miniseries required the crew to not use or have any reflective material where Curry could see his own face. It's so funny that, like, he's so scary he can scare the shit out of himself.
Well, also, I'm just like, that is, I feel like that's kind of, like, how deep is your fear of clowns? Like, how deep is it? Because, like...
Mine's pretty bad.
I mean, all right, fair enough. But, like, to be, like, if you were dressed up as a clown, would you be afraid of yourself?
I can kind of see a little, I like, might, no. Ah, there's a weirdness to it, I don't know.
Okay, now that I'm thinking about it, you might be right.
Yeah, if he just catches himself, like, oh, shit, looked at the wrong puddle.
Okay, all right, fair enough. Also, the more that I'm drinking, the more I'm, like, jumpy, I'm like, oh, shit.
But of course, in fact, a member of the technical staff of it, goddamn the script, was almost fired for using a hand mirror while Curry was having his makeup put on. The word it fucks this up so bad.
It's a horrible word.
But of course, Curry's performance unnerved the cast and crew so much that they avoided him as much as possible while they were on set. And of course, while waiting between shots, Kerr would be chain-smoking and showing his sharp teeth if one of the child actors got too close to him. As Perkins recalled, quotes, He really tried to intimidate us because he wanted the fear to be real in our performances.
Yeah.
End quote. Jesus.
Have you seen that photo of Tim Curry smoking outside as...
I don't think so.
Like, literally, it's my favorite thing on the planet, if it wants to load. Yeah.
Show it to me. I have seen that photo. That's a good photo. Oh, that's
like, that's kind of my favorite thing probably on the planet.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
I just...
That's such a good... We gotta post that. Okay, that's a story right there.
For sure.
However, Wallace recalled having a favorable time working with Curry. Quote, quote, Tim was always well prepared, easy on set, patient, and low key, end quote.
That
he's a professional.
It tracks.
He's a professional.
It tracks.
Yeah,
absolutely.
He's a fucking professional. Yeah. Explaining why directing a screen version of a King story was difficult, Wallace summarized, quote, Stephen King is so good with language that he can make almost anything sound incredibly scary. Some of King's images translate to film. Some are simply ethereal, like smoke.
Ooh.
Oh shit, Tommy Lee Wallace with his fucking poetry there. a lot of Wallace's directing was influenced by films he worked on with John Carpenter, such as Halloween, of course, and The Fog. He made several technical and staging decisions just to make each scene scarier or weird. I don't see any Carpenter-esque elements in this, though. I don't know.
I would say the scene where Eddie's in the shower.
Hey, that's a good point. Yeah, I can see that.
Like that one.
Yeah.
Like just off the top of my head,
You're right.
That's kind of like
it.
Kind of
has that like almost POV stalkery kind of way of going into it. That makes sense. Okay, corrected. but of course,
fact check.
Yeah. Like, hold on a fucking second. I got some instant memory right here. But these included interesting cameras tricks, such as the Chinese restaurant scene being shot with a handheld camera, and shots where it goes through pipes filmed as if they were from its point of view. A decision inspired by Wallace's past experiences, of course, working with Carpenter. I feel like the POV shots were a little more Raimi to me than Carpenter.
Yeah, I can see that. Like, some of the POV shots, I was like, oh, cool, Evil Dead.
Yes, exactly. I'm just giving the sound effect. Just give it to me. But producing and shooting its final spider form required a budget of $200,000 and 13 weeks of time. Son of a bitch.
$200,000. That's how you said it. That is how you said
it.
Why do
you think you kidnapped Chelsea Clinton?
God damn it, Anthony. This is our season premiere.
What? Rochelle is a good movie.
We have to have our shit together.
I gotta channel my inner Chris Tucker when I read these ridiculous facts.
You wrote the episode. Act like it.
It began... God damn it. I don't even know what it this is. It began with Mixon?
Mixon is the company that did the special effects for the film.
Oh,
I didn't
new have, information that I have not explained.
I didn't have space to include this because there was so, like...
There's a lot.
There's,
no,
like,
there's a
so
lot.
Much
yeah,
special
is...
effects, like, information on this fucking movie. Like, it would have been a whole other section. And I'm like, I'm not making
it. It would have been a whole other section.
I fucking... I'm going to throttle you. Like Homer Simpson throttles Bart.
Oh my god. Like, while I try to finish, like, it began with Mixon coming up with the idea of a soft and fleshy spider-like creature.
It's like a fleshlight.
And all the legs. All the joints.
It's like a fleshlight spider. And then I'm like, who's not a fucking spider? And I'm like, there are people. There are people! But also, you have arachnophobia, so I know this is like a horrible trait of like a lie.
When they said fleshy, I'm just like, okay, yeah, I can see.
Stop
can
using
see.
The word fleshy to describe anything. I hate the word. Like, you know how people have problems with the word moist? I don't have problems with it at all.
Oh, I love the word moist, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me.
Fleshy, no.
Yeah, Brittany fucking agrees.
Yeah.
No, I don't like the word fleshy, and I don't like the word congealed. Like, those are the two ones where I'm just like...
Hey, no, solid picks. I agree. Those are terrible. Those are terrible words. Congealed,
They're disgusting words. Moist, I'm like, who gives a shit? Like, I think of cake. I think of baked goods.
But when somebody describes something as fleshy, I'm like, if they're describing something in particular that I've seen before, but they say the word fleshy, it becomes disgusting. I'm like, yeah, that woof, not that special effect anymore.
No, 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 thank you.
Jeez.
She's like, please stop talking.
You're fleshy. But the spider at the climax was a fully operable puppet, clearly. It was the last scene to be filmed.
$200,000,
yeah.
Better than a fully operable puppet.
Yeah, exactly. John Ritter was disappointed that the final battle had to be fought with a puppet and not Tim Curry. Because he felt Pennywise was the real villain of the story and not some fake-ass motherfucking spider piece of shit.
Imagine just... But then it would have just been, like, a whole bunch of adults against one clown.
Yeah, he's like, one clown? God damn it.
But they kind of fixed that in the remake, which... We'll eventually have to talk about it, because I keep bringing it up, so I should probably stop talking about it.
No, the thing is, like, they all, we'll talk probably in discussion, I would imagine, but, like, there's something to, I think, the distance from which these two versions of this adaptation were.
27 and 29 years.
Mm-hmm. I think it gives enough for this version to become part of, like, Americana.
Agreed.
And then... To have the audacity to adapt it and then pull it off.
Oh, so good.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. So, finally, this motherfucker came out.
Yep. On TV.
On TV. It, the movie, originally aired on ABC in 1990 on the nights of November 18th and November 20th. Part 1 was the fifth highest rating program of the week and was watched in 17.5 million households.
Jesus, fuck. Some series finales didn't even have those numbers
no.
right there. That's pretty good.
Part 2 was the second highest rating program of the week, according to writer Lawrence. It was considered a major success for ABC, garnering nearly 30 million viewers over its two-night premiere.
That's a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I would say, because we don't have, like, box office numbers to go off of, I would call that a success.
Definitely. No, because, I mean, if you think about, like, the way TV ratings worked, I know it was different in this early time, because, thinking shit like The Simpsons, like, it was excessive, it got, like, 11 million, which was huge at the time.
Yeah.
But, like, that's, like, they were doing shirts with Bart.
When did The Simpsons start?
1990. Yeah. Mm. So, like, think about
it. I'm really glad you just had that, like, right at the forefront of your
brain. Technically 1989, but, like, Christmas 1989, and then, like, 1990.
Okay, the fact that, this is far too detailed that I was expecting you to know,
yeah,
but also,
no,
I shouldn't...
Off the top of my fucking head.
I should have expected, because you are a Simpsons nerd.
That's right. But, like, the ratings for something like that, like, it was still in the tens of millions, but, like, it was enough where they were making shirts, and Michael Jackson does a music video with Bartman, and it was, like, a phenomenon, right? This has 17 million, that's a lot.
Yeah. Totally.
For a miniseries? Jesus.
So, during a time when recording television programs on tape with a VCR was becoming a commonly practiced activity. Fuck.
Yep.
This was becoming common in family homes. The second part of it was the most taped program in the month of November, with 1.96 million tape machines detected.
How do they even fucking gauge that?
I think they had, like, something where they could just tell if something, like, if
yeah.
like, something was being recorded,
mm-hmm.
like, in the way that, like, they can tell if you're being, if something is being screen recorded now.
Hey, big government always got us on the fucking... Oh,
big brother, man.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, television experts reported rave and not-so-fond reviews of it from television critics. Farrell Peter of the Oregonian honored it as, quote, the best horror show ever made for network television and among the better miniseries of any genre offered this year, praising its multi-layered stories and performances.
Yeah, okay.
Some critics called it one of the better, the far better King films. Interesting. Britannia is just like, I don't think so.
You want to talk about Farrell?
The Cincinnati Post labeled it one of the creepiest productions put together for broadcast TV, although opined it to be nothing more than for cheap thrills and chills.
Hmm.
All right.
Mixed praise.
Bro! What? What?
She has opinions.
What? Oh, you're like right here.
She wants lap time.
Holy shit. I thought you were in the room. Come here, you little fucking monster. The most praise came toward its first part, its fuck. a common highlight being the performances of the child actors and its development of the losers. The second part garnered more criticism, a recurring con being the adult actors.
Yep.
Yeesh. Lawrence opined the adult actors were more willing to accept the story on its own terms, thus making the second half less interesting.
Hmm.
So, I'm interested in how it kind of ended up being broadcast originally, because what we see is like it kind of interweaves the two, right?
No, I mean, I think it's the, which version do you watch?
Whatever Amazon told me to watch.
See, I bootlegged it, so I don't know. I got. It was a 3-hour engagement overall.
Uh-huh.
So it was 90 minutes for the first part, 90 minutes for the second part. Mine was...
But it kept cutting back and forth between them being kids, them being adults, them being kids.
Only
being
really
adults.
For the first part.
Yeah.
And then the second part was
it's
more
like
the adult story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, fair.
Yeah, that's how I got it.
Fucking... All right, my cat's an asshole. So as of March 2020 on Rotten Tomatoes, the miniseries holds an approval rating of 70% based on 23 reviews. The site's consensus reads, though hampered by an uneven second half, it supplies a wealth of funhouse thrills and an ideal turn from Tim Curry as Pennywise, unquote.
Mm.
So, however, many writers also panned its long length and padding. The Washington Times writer Rick Martin criticizing its lack of scary moments over a 4-hour running time. The Miami Herald critic Hal Bodecker wrote that it was padded with the leads dickering around with confronting it as if it was, quote, a monster movie without the heroes confronting the thing and, quote, trite and, quote, tasteless dialogue, such as the slurs targeted towards Black Mike and Jewish Stan.
Hmm.
I'm like, hey. I mean, I don't know. What do you think about that?
I mean, it was the 90s. And they're doing a story based on the 50s? The 50s? Like, they're gonna be pieces of shit.
It's true.
Yeah, that's kind of time
it
accurate.
It didn't get thrown in here, but the person who played the bully, the actor,
mm-hmm.
he was like, he hated having to say slurs. Like, he would repeatedly apologize for having to say the N-word, like, to the actor and, like, be apologetic about the whole thing.
Yeah, but you know what? I think it makes sense within the context of the story.
It totally does,
yeah.
But I feel bad that, like, he felt like, I was just like, at least he's like, he acknowledges, like,
yeah.
He's like, I'm not supposed to
I'm not a piece of shit, man. I'm not a piece of shit. I don't mean to beat you guys up and do all the stuff.
I'm not a garbage human being.
Although, I feel like a good rap duo would be Black Mike and Jewish Stan. Yeah. Good 90s hip-hop duo right there.
For sure. Oh, for sure. I love that. Oh my god. Some of the reviewers felt the miniseries failed to capture King's horror style. One of them included Dusty Saunders, which is a great name.
Great name.
he wrote that its horror wasn't, quote, unrelenting enough, unquote, as some of the, quote, the scenes and the special effects come across as routine, familiar work from a predictable monster movies, unquote. He also was an outlier in dismissing the character of Pennywise.
What a bitch.
Writing that he, quote, comes across as a berserk, somewhat laughable circus character, unquote.
It's a Brooklyn accent, dude. He's like,
I mean, it is kind of ridiculous, but I kind of love it.
I love it, yeah.
So, let's go into some Letterboxd reviews. It has over 48,000 reviews.
That's a lot.
Yeah, but its average score is staunchly at 3. It is, like, in the fucking middle, like, all the way up there. Like,
I feel like the remake influenced that a little bit, though.
I don't know, because a lot of people watched it in preparation for the remake.
Ah, that makes sense. Okay, yeah.
So, Tyler Llewellyn says, with 2 stars, quote, Pennywise is really one extra ass bitch.
Oh.
Jake Kwiatkowski, with 3 stars, says, I really hate when movies try to create scenes where it's supposed to be super dark, and instead there's clear vision throughout the whole room because of an unexpected light source. This movie is not good, but it's got tremendous heart. Agreed.
I think that's a really good summary right there.
Parker, with 2.5 stars, says, quote, this is the longest episode of Are You Afraid of the Dark I've ever seen.
Damn.
Unquote. Like, most of the reviews are like this. Like, it was tearing the movie to fucking shreds.
There's a lot to pull from. I'd definitely say that for sure. But, of course, we've got to get to legacy time, so let's do it. So, many rich... blah, blah, blah.
Maybe retrospective.
For Sean Connery. keep drinking more. All right. So...
if you start crying, I'm going to kick your ass.
Mm-hmm. It's like fucking door. Many retrospective pieces have spotlighted Curry's version of Pennywise, being called by several publications and scholars as one of the most terrifying clown characters in film and television. Goddamn.
Yeah.
In fact, it is widely considered the archetype of the evil clown genre, wrote Jessica Glenza.
I'm assuming it's some kind of film scholar.
I would, like, oh, person on the street. What's your name, Jessica? What do you think of Pennywise? I think he is widely considered the archetype of the evil clown genre. Wow, great. Go back to your job at Kmart. Cool. So, Collins and James Smythe of The Guardian claim the miniseries to have a cult status. Smythe using Curry's portrayal as the main reason, of course. Quote, to this day, it's Pennywise that people turn to if you ask them to picture a scary clown. Far more people than ever read the book have seen pictures of Curry's performance, or have watched clips, or remember their siblings forcing them to watch it with them, end quote. Yeah, okay.
It's true.
Mm-hmm. Curry's portrayal of the character turned him into a horror icon, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. And my family, of course, we loved horror movies. Just as a family.
Mm-hmm.
And when it was a thing, yeah. If it was on, we're watching.
Like, really?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. For sure.
God, I did not have that at all.
Again, my theas, we'll slap it on as babysitting material.
Oh my
so.
God. Don't behave. Did they, like, threaten you with Pennywise?
No, for some reason I loved it. I don't know. It didn't scare me as much as a kid. Yeah. I mean, it was still terrifying, but in a way that I think I could handle.
Interesting.
Yeah. So while King was admitted to, while King has admitted to enjoying the miniseries, calling it a, quote, really ambitious adaptation of a really long book, Wallace, who only read the novel years after finishing it, stated in 2003 that he found the miniseries to be inferior to its source material. In 2015, however, he said that he was, quote, was and am very, very proud of it, end quote. Okay,
nice.
He should be. He's yeah, dude, that's a lot of hours to at least try, like, a bold-ass adaptation. So in May 2017, an Indiegogo campaign was created for Pennywise, The Story of It, an independent documentary film about the production and lasting impact of the It miniseries. The project met its crowdfunding goal in June 2017, with the production beginning the following month. The film, directed by Chris Griffiths, and produced by John Campapiano?
Sure.
Okay. And Gary Smart, much easier name, will feature interviews with members of the miniseries cast and crew, including Tim Curry, Tommy Lee Wallace, Bart Mixon, Seth Green, Richard Thomas, and Emily Perkins.
I was like, I found this when I was like getting ready to do research for this episode, and I was like, oh cool, there's a documentary, and I was like, oh, it's not out yet.
Oh,
I was like, fuck.
It's been 3 years, man. Come on.
I know. Well, also, I expect because of COVID, like,
the
release has probably been delayed a little staggered.
Yeah. Uh-huh. They gotta get Tim Curry. He's old now. So sad. So sad.
Listen, he still does, when he's feeling up to it, he still does, conventions.
Oh, really?
Every now and again. Like, he used to. I don't know if he still does anymore, but, like, I know a lot of people who would, like, see him at, like, conventions and stuff, and he would do, like, meet and greets and stuff.
That's so cool.
In, like, his fucking wheelchair.
His wheelchair bound.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
which
I was
is
just
insane.
Like, oh, my God. I'm just like, when he goes, I am going to be fucking devastated.
Goddamn national treasure right there.
Yeah.
Seriously.
He's so great.
Yeah. And, of course, then, of course, as you all know, it was remade in 2017, with a part one and a motherfucking part two coming out in 2019. But we're going to have to save that one for another day.
That'll be a fun time.
That'll be a fun time. I definitely want to talk about that one.
Yes. Yes, let's talk about the movie.
Hey, season three, y'all. Let's do it. Let's fucking do it. What are your thoughts on the movie, Alex?
So I think it would be poignant to go with, like, my experience with the movie.
Okay.
Where it all started, mm-hmm. where it all began. I remember my uncle telling me about Pennywise, like about the movie,
mm-hmm.
and I think my imagination came up with something far scarier than what the movie actually ended up being. When I was very, like, I'm talking like five, like a very, very young, five, six, seven, like around that time. Like, he was just like, oh, yeah, there's this movie. It's called It. It's about a clown who lives in, like, the drain of, like, your bathtub. It comes out and will kill you. Which made me terrified of, like, showering for, like...
Jeez.
But I was, like, fucking terrified of, like, this, like, mental image of, like, a clown living in the drain. And also subsequently made me terrified of clowns, which I still am to this day. I hadn't seen it until... I don't know... I was around a teenager, so
mm-hmm.
I think my mom actually showed it to me, because I think she, like, tolerates it.
Yeah, that's the one you get away with, I think, yeah.
But I remember, like, really liking it, even though I thought it was, like, I'm like, this is a 7-hour-long movie, right?
Yeah.
Like,
oh, it's a long one, yeah.
Because we all know I have a horrible attention span, so sitting through a 3-hour-long movie, I'm just like, oh my god, but, I really like it.
Okay.
Also, I will say, I do think, as you so eloquently put it, about your, like, hometown experiences, I do have nostalgia goggles
mm-hmm.
when it
Same
comes
here.
To this movie.
Yeah.
Like, I think it just reminds me of a simpler time.
It does, absolutely. It's 90s in a way that I think is very appealing.
Yes.
Yeah, it's not like it's hard. It really does.
Like, they put so much effort into, like, I think they bit off a little bit more than they could chew,
for sure. Oh, yeah.
But they put in the effort.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
it's like a cake that looks hideous but tastes really good.
It's like I feel like they ran out of money towards the end of that, though. When it came to Spider Time, they're like, okay, maybe $300,000, maybe.
Yeah. So there's a lot going on with this movie, and, like, I think also they were like, oh, like, so the clown is an actual, like, just a creepy killer clown, right? And then, like, Stephen King was like, did you read the book? And I was like, no. And they're like, okay, sit the fuck down. And then he was like, this is what happens. And they're like, oh, shit.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I mean, to, like, do, like, even the new ones couldn't even, like, really faithfully adapt it. It is a fucking beast of a book.
Even splitting it up into two feature length movies, like
long
box
feature
office
length
movies.
Movies.
Oh my god,
yeah.
They're so fucking long.
You still can't quite capture what it is. An acid trip, coked out, fucking
again
weird.
Cocaine
nostalgic
Steve.
Movie.
Cocaine
too.
Steve could have come up with Space Hurdle.
Yes, exactly. And still talk about his childhood in the '50s. Yeah, 100%.
And that
100%.
And he's and like. That's it. That's all, like, and I'm like, oh my god.
Mm.
But, what are your thoughts on the movie?
So, this one, as I stated before, it was a staple amongst the babysitters and the Theas.
That's so funny.
And, like, this is one of those movies that I think we may have been one of those people that recorded it and, like, taped when it came on. maybe not the first run, but
right.
like a later one.
Eventually.
Yeah, I remember, I think, fast forwarding through some commercials. So, and, but the thing is, like, that made it much longer. Like, in my mind, I thought it was a much longer movie. This is actually only, like, 3 hours, maybe. That's
only
it.
3 hours?
But, I mean, in my mind, I'm like, okay, with commercials and the old taste we had, this is, like, a 5-6 hour fucking thing, right? Nope. Only about 3 hours, 90 minutes each parts. And to me, I remember always scenes sticking out. Like,
mm-hmm.
there were scenes where I'm like, no matter what, this is going to scare the shit out of me. And
which scenes?
It was definitely the shower scene.
The shower scene scares the shit out of me, too.
The Georgie scene in the beginning, I was a little freaked out with, too. Just because the way Tim Curry...
Yeah, seeing Tim Curry in a fucking sewer drain made me afraid to look down a fucking sewer drain.
The way he talks about it, yeah.
The second time I watched this movie, I was in college. So I watched it in the lounge of my dorm.
Nice.
With, like, a whole bunch of my, like, college dorm
mm-hmm.
mates. And they were just, like, kind of talking shit the whole time. And I was sitting there watching it as, like, oh, God.
Oh.
And, like, I was, like, texting my mom. And I'm like, I'm watching it. And she's just, like, the 1990s miniseries. And I was like, yeah.
Wait, I do remember one that always fucked me up, though. Was, when I forget which character it is, he sees his war vet dad in the
yes,
marsh.
Ben
sees his war vet dad in the marsh, and then it becomes Penny. And I like that to me with the music. I was always
like
there's an eeriness to it.
It's very creepy. Well, also because the dad is like very like 60s, like picture
yep.
perfect, like mm-hmm. high cheekbones.
But the
face.
Acting is like a little curryish. It's a little
yes.
bit just
it's
like
uncanny.
Uncanny.
Valley.
Uncanny
mm-hmm.
as fuck. So overall though, that was my previous thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
When I come to it now, I respect the heart this movie has. I wouldn't say that it's, again, it's not a good movie. It's just not. Like, it's not great.
I'm glad we can admit that.
Yeah, no, but there's an appeal to this movie, which I think also, okay, I say it's not a good movie, but if it does have enough charm to make you like it, there are good aspects of the movie. You could kind of qualify it that
mm-hmm.
way. What I found interesting was the structure of the first half with the kids was I didn't remember it being so choppy and back and forth. I remembered it more as a fluid thing.
Yeah, me too, actually.
Right? And then the adult portion is more fluid.
It's more like once you learn the backstory from the kids, then they're just like, okay, the kids like kind of fuck off.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, like, kind of going on to my next or like to the next question, did, like, watching it with, like, nostalgia goggles or, like, watching it so much as a kid, like, did it influence watching it now as an adult? Like, you're in, like, how...
I think it influenced my tolerance of being able to watch it, to be honest.
Well, I will say, like, some of the critiques were just, like, the dialogue is soapy, it's not very good, blah, 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 blah,
it's
blah, blah.
It's the adult actors, they don't... Their performances are bad. That's the thing that fucks
yeah.
me up a little bit.
The only, like, I will say, like, the Chinese restaurant scene is, like, fucking iconic.
Yes, absolutely. Still,
face.
Yeah, it's yeah, I know. It's a great scene for Tanya. I agree.
No, it's a fucking amazing scene. Bro!
You know, though, with that, the 90s special effects, too, the practical effects for the Chinese restaurant make it more disturbing, too.
Yeah. Well, also, was it mentioned? Did we mention it in the discussion? But it was shot with a handheld film.
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I was like,
there's a franticness to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, like, I think, again, I still feel like you could watch it because my nieces and nephews are their kids, though. Like,
how old are your nieces and nephews?
Well, they've watched it in the past. I mean, now one of them's 12, he's 13 now, 13.
Okay.
Then 10, and one just turned 7. But I'm talking, like, in the past 2 years they've watched it so that they were younger, obviously.
Oh, my God.
We're a horror family.
I get
I'm
it,
sorry.
And I
We'd,
respect it.
They watched The Shining when they were, like, 5.
That's mad. I mean, I respect it.
But when, you know what's crazy? When The Shining is on during Halloween.
They love
like,
it, right?
They're like, oh, The Shining is on. Let's all sit
those,
and watch it.
Those
and they're
kids
like
are
children.
Cool as shit.
Yeah. That's
like
how we're
when
raised.
When they get to, like, high school or
Tell
whatever.
You.
Well, okay.
Chicano families, that's how we do it. You just horror movies and fucking tacos. That's it.
Well, like, here's the thing. It's like, I love that, like, when we were kids, like the little dweebs who like, who are you?
Yeah.
like we're just like total fucking nerds. Mm-hmm. And now like I'm just like
paid off later on.
I mean, yeah. But like now, like one of the top questions I get on like dating profiles, like, so tell me about your podcast. You like horror movies? And I'm like, yeah.
I'm like, bitch, I fucking love horror movies.
Like this, like literally, like I was just like, I will school you.
I don't know shit.
like, oh, it's so fun. But no, like, it's very interesting to see how times have changed in terms of, like, just general temperament towards mm-hmm. horror film.
Well, and speaking of, like, well, horror's obviously changed a lot
mm-hmm.
throughout the decades. But when you come back to how much has changed, how hokey some previous horror is, and how they take it too seriously for some eras, where we're at now, the one thing that really stands out, I think, why nostalgia goggles don't 100% apply to this film, is Tim Curry.
Agreed.
His version of Pennywise, no matter how, what time period you see
it's
it,
so
when he
creepy.
Hits, dude, it's fucking like, and it like, I'm like, I can't look away from the screen.
No, every time he's in frame, I'm just like, oh, what is he gonna do? What is he gonna
yes.
do? What is he gonna do?
What, like, even in the fucking, in the photo book, when they open it, and he's, just, like, history, and he's, like, walking up to the camera.
Uh-huh. I was, that part scared the shit out of me. I was like, because I forgot that part. I was like, what is he gonna do?
Mm-hmm.
Which leads me to my next question. Did Pennywise give you a childhood or adulthood fear of clowns? And if
yeah.
so, what makes him scary to you?
He did influence Fear of Clowns, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's something to the way Tim Curry's, first of all, his voice.
The Bronx.
The Bronx.
The like chain smoking
yeah,
Bronx.
Deep fucking
yeah.
like that part of it's such a harsh sound coming from him, obviously. And I think the way they did the makeup for Tim Curry makes him super uncanny valley, super creepy, not like menacing scary da da da, but like creepy enough that the way it's filmed, his bright colors, and he just sticks out.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's scary. He's just fucking scary. What about you?
So it gave me a fear of clowns, and it kind of just grew
mm-hmm.
To the point that I went to the circus when I was like not too long after being told about clowns that would eat me from my shower drain.
Yes.
And I cried, like, because I was, like, I was sent up on stage with, like, clowns and stuff, and, like, I freaked out.
I think he's close enough in look to a regular clown where he fucks up regular
exactly.
clowns. Exactly. Yeah.
That's exactly right. Like, the fact that, like, he looks close enough to, like, a normal fucking clown that, like,
mm-hmm.
any clown could be Pennywise, and
yeah.
I'm just like, I don't care for that shit at all.
But he's got teeth, he's got a little more fucked up makeup,
yeah.
and he does some menacing shit.
Yeah, I mean, when his teeth get sharp, that's when I'm just, like that one scene where he's just like, ah! And like, he
yeah.
leans back, and I'm just like, oh god. But, I think what scares me the most about him is just, like, how non-menacing his menacingness is.
Yeah.
Like, he's just saying, like, normal, random shit, but, like, it's obviously so, like, otherworldly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're taking something so obscure, like, him as, like, a fucking clown, and putting him in a drain, or putting him standing in a marsh, and
mm-hmm.
and I think the uncanniness of just him existing in these random places makes him so creepy.
Well, that's a very good point. And I would add that the way he performs is still like a clown. It's still exaggerated.
Yeah.
It's still super exaggerated,
mm-hmm.
super, like, I don't know. Like, it's him doing his, like, wave in a drain is, like, enough of a clown thing.
It's true.
To, like, and then add the elements of, like, it not being a natural thing that he's it about part of. Like, it really, really comes together. Like, that's a performance right there.
Well, there's that, and then also, I let you down like you fucking wanted. I think there's also the, because I'm trying to not compare Tim Curry to Bill Skarsgård.
No, they're different.
They're totally
different. Yeah.
Well, I just mean, like, in the sense that, like, he's a normal clown
mm-hmm.
that has a menacing voice versus Bill Skarsgård is a freaky-looking clown that has, like, a very, like, childish, like, kind
yeah.
of soothing voice.
Oh,
and I
yeah.
think, like, they kind of switched a little bit. I also like that Tim Curry kind of gave Bill Skarsgård his blessing.
Yeah, that's great. That's
like,
fucking cool.
Yeah,
I love that.
So, all very cool shit.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I think just like the different approach to Pennywise is very interesting, and I do appreciate that.
I think you can see that most in the Georgie scene. Because they're both scary in their own ways.
Well, it's also almost pretty much shot for shot at the same fucking
exactly,
scene,
but
so.
Like a different performance of Pennywise. You can
yeah.
see, like, and God, the actor that plays Georgie in 1991, he looks like my little brother did. My little brother PJ, who listens to the podcast. PJ.
Hi, PJ.
They look exactly the fucking same.
Really?
Like, I was watching it, I'm just like, fuck that, like,
it's
that same.
PJ!
That same, like, with the brown hair and the haircut and, like, the fat cheeks. I'm like, I remember PJ, my little brother, in that era of time. And, like, so I was a little more scared. And I think it was probably why I was a little scary as a kid. I was like, well, he looks like my little brother. And so when you see, like, the teeth come, even right now I'm thinking about it, I'm like, fuck, that actually made that probably a little more scary. Like seriously. But he looks a lot like my little brother did. So I think with added Tim Curry being, like, the stranger and, like, well, now we know each other. Like, that kind of thing.
I don't know. I think that definitely gives it that extra little. Also, the scene obviously with Bill and Georgie, like, is always so cute. Like in both ones.
Oh, see, that's not the okay. That actually brings me another point here because going back to the sibling thing, me and my brother, of course, are a similar distance of age apart. Especially when you're younger and like one of you grows a little more than the other one. So I know I was shitty sometimes. Like, you know you are as an older sibling. Like, sometimes you're not, you don't mean to be, but sometimes you're shitty.
Their age difference, like...
It's like 3 years.
Oh, is it? Was it?
Well, they're like kids.
Yeah.
So, you know, I feel like Georgie's like the kid, and then Bill's like preteen. So there's that era where like a 3 year gap would seem monumental.
Interesting. I think they're a little bit long. Like a little.
Is
like,
it?
I would say like 5 years.
Oh, it didn't seem like that to me.
Georgie seemed like 7.
Yeah, he seemed like maybe 7 or 8. Yeah.
7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Like they were 13 in the movie.
Oh, that makes sense then. Okay, it was a bigger gap.
Yeah.
But I feel like when you're like at that preteen age, every gap seems gigantic.
I agree.
Yeah.
But like my brother and I, like we have an 8 year age gap, and like I remember just being a shithead to him sometimes. He doesn't I don't think he remembers much of it.
I think mine does. Yeah.
Well, like, he might remember, but like most of it, like I tried to make it few and far between. But like when he was just like, I want to play, and I was just like,
yeah,
you know,
that kind of shit. Exactly the same thing. Where I'm just like, I'm going through some shit. I'm a teenager, and then
or like,
I'm like,
I'm reading my Twilight book, you know?
Yeah. Or I'm just, mine was Goosebumps, but yeah, I mean, I remember being like,
we get our horror where
right?
we can.
But where you're like, don't mean to be insensitive, but you're also, you are being a prick.
Well, you're trying to be your own fucking person, and you're like trying to be like, I don't want to be pirate, like, you know, trying to like distance yourself from your fucking family, even though you're still a literal
exactly.
child.
You're just, it's like, let me just have my own time, Mom.
Like, it's so fucking funny. Like, every time I'm like, I think about it, like, I was like, oh my God, like thinking about like high school and shit. Like, I was a for real, literal child, and I thought I was like God's gift to mankind,
and
like,
you're like this fucking jerk.
I'm an asshole. All teenagers are assholes. I'm like 99.9% sure that like all teenagers suck,
but that's what makes that scene scary though. I remember being that asshole, and to the idea of like one instance of my assholish behavior to my sibling could result in like that.
Yeah, Pennywise.
It's a universal like
fear,
regret, like universal like just like a pain. You're like, fuck. If any activity I can pull from my childhood where I was being a dick, and that was the last time I saw that sibling, oof, that's fucked. And this movie plays right into that. Like that's why I think this kind of story is pretty timeless, and that fucks with Bill for the whole series.
It's his, yeah. To the point of annoyance.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
that's true. The point where I'm like, go to therapy.
In the 90s, no.
Obviously. You know what? Here's the thing. In the 90s, no. In the 2017 version, I'm like, go to therapy.
Okay, yeah. It's more socially acceptable now. You can do it, buddy.
And, like, go to...
Come on, James McAvoy.
Especially when it's James McAvoy, because I don't know what it was about, like, him in particular playing...
He's got that leader face, you know?
It's true. When he does. Like, him playing Bill, I was like, oh my fucking God. Like, if you don't handle, like, deal
you
with
were Professor
shit,
X, sir.
Like, if you don't deal with this shit, I'm going to jump through the screen and kick your ass. Okay, so why do you think It, the movie, was able to cement itself so securely in American pop culture, despite the fact that it received mixed reviews at best?
Because critics, it's bullshit sometimes. I'm sorry. They just are.
All right.
Yeah, no, sometimes they really don't matter. I mean, they matter, so, like, there's a good portion of time, but they do, to be honest with you. Like, the people nowadays are like, I don't know, the reviews say blah, 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 which happens. But for this particular movie, I think there's something so, I don't know, I wouldn't say engaging is the word, but the way Tim Curry performed, again, back to Pennywise, clowns a universal fear, the familiar elements of this film are universal enough where I feel like anybody watching it could derive some meaning out of it, like, no matter what its execution is, like
The
story.
End of innocence, child.
Yeah,
blah, blah, blah,
yeah, exactly.
Like,
well, the end of innocence.
Thanks, Sean Connery.
Yes. Is that my dad out there? It's a fucking clown. But, like, the Uncanny Valley-ness, like, there's a uniqueness to this film, which is why I feel like when Tommy Lee Wallace talks about the Carpenter-esque way he tried to shoot it, I'm like, you don't have to do that, dude. Like, you actually, this movie's kind of your own thing.
And make it your own, because like, there's a lot to go off of.
Yeah,
and
a lot of good.
And a lot, like, it is a blank canvas, but, like, there's a lot to go off of.
Yeah, like I wouldn't say the good parts that he did were the Carpenter. I'd say, like, they're the Tommy Lee Wallace parts, man. Like,
they're Season of the Witch parts.
Yeah, they're the parts that stand out, and they you know, I think there is...
Which I think I've re-examined my Season of the Witch stance.
Yeah?
I think I like it a lot more than I gave it credit for in the episode.
See, I might also... No, I'm sorry. Yeah, no.
No, every time I look back on it, I look back. Like, every time I... Like, if I were to sit here and look back on it, I just look back on it with, like, this overwhelming fondness. And, like, just, like, it's... I know that it's bad, but it makes me so happy that I can't... Like, it just makes me happy. So I'm just like, I like this movie.
Mm-hmm. Interesting, because it doesn't do that for me, but I can tell you that the elements, you know what, I think it was a little too slick for how cheesy it was, and without that slickness, but that cheesy kind of weirdness behind it, is why it works.
Yeah,
it's
cheesy,
not that
cheesy
slick.
Cheesy weirdness, yeah.
It's not that slick, this movie, but
yeah.
Like, because of that,
uh-huh.
there's an underlying kind of like, whoa, when it does horror, it's fucking scary. Because
it's
not overproduced horror. It's like, it's scary on its merits of just what the situation unfolds.
I do think it's interesting that Pennywise, it took Tim Curry so long to get into his fucking makeup. Because when you see him on screen, I'm like, that is so obviously clown makeup.
Yeah, no, definitely. But that's how clowns are, though. That's why it's scary.
Fair point.
Ugh.
Like, they have to look a little grungy and trashy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then with this, like, murderous, like, transforming fucking clown, ugh.
But, I mean, for me, I think, I think, I wish, like, what I would give to be, like, just, like, me now in the 90s, like, just to, like, watch people watch the movie and, like, get kind of, like, their reaction on, like, how, I don't know, it just kind of affected America, because, like,
it was
literally...
It's post-Reagan, so this is, like, a very conservative, pearl-clutching culture here you're dealing with. Like, think about that.
I know. Well, I'm just curious then, because, like, this movie was, like, a stone thrown into the pond of horror. Like, it had, like, ripples, like, outgoing.
Yeah,
like,
definitely.
You know,
definitely.
You know what I
yes,
mean?
Yes, exactly.
So I'm just kind of, I don't understand, I don't know if it's just, like, just, like, the culture at the time. I don't understand if it's just, like, the time in which it came out, because, like, 1990, like, obvious, like, I mean, not obviously, but, like, I was not alive. This was pre-me.
Yes.
So, I don't have any frame of reference for, like, if this was, like, considered good for the 90s, because, like, watching it now, you know, 30 years later.
Yeah.
Because we are 30 years later.
Jeez.
It obviously does not hold up. It doesn't age well, which sucks. But, like, again, nostalgia goggles are great for that because mm-hmm. watching it as a very, very young child, you get those nostalgia goggles. So when you watch it now, it does give you that, like, feeling of, like, seeing an old friend, you know?
No, exactly.
Even though you know that, like, watching it now, it's like, oh, this does not hold up well at all.
Yeah.
I just don't know if, like, at the time people were like, this is not made well. Or at the time, they're like, this writing's amazing.
Well, I mean, think about Pet Sematary and other stuff, too. That stuff was received pretty well.
Good point.
So, maybe, I mean, you know, we've had so much entertainment in between in these 30 years that we have a different criteria to look at.
I just hate, I mean, I don't hate, but, like, it's unfortunate to me, and it kind of makes me sad that, like, our idea of what's good horror has just kind of, like, gone up,
mm-hmm.
like, in terms of, like, production value.
Yeah, and then kind of, like, also the extreme of, like, what counts,
what can I, yeah, what can I get away with?
Yeah.
You know, and that sucks, and that, like, I like that, right, girl? Preach it. Anyway. Come here.
It's fucking cat.
I'm like, please, just chew on my headphones. I would hate that if you were to do that. But, no, I do think that, like, times have changed significantly since the 90s and, like, what is considered a good horror.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that this was, like, at the time, like, a really, really good movie.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Especially because it did so well.
It did so well, and people obviously keep talking about it, and it was good enough that people, like, they're like, oh, we're going to remake it. They're just like, well, how are you going to do it?
Well, also, this inspired mini series for a bunch of other Stephen King,
because it was so big.
Yeah,
that's, yeah, exactly.
Like, even like The Shining was like he wrote it. Yeah, for like a mini series, even though
it sucked, dude.
Yeah,
not good. But I think that also the way you're framing this brings up a good point, because so much that we experienced in the last 30 years, when we look back at this movie, what is actually scary really stands out.
Mm-hmm.
Because even though we've gone through Saw, and we've gone through all these fucking crazy ass
through high tension,
Hereditary, like all this shit. Something about Tim Curry standing in a marsh,
holding balloons, waving,
scary as shit. And like, that's how you kind of know, like, even though it's not, like, there was something ethereal, there's something underneath all this that kind of goes beyond it, timeless, not the whole movie.
No.
But sometimes
the fashion doesn't hold up, the dialogue doesn't hold up, the acting does not hold up. I will say kids definitely
do. They absolutely do.
The kids hold their own, which is like fucking badass.
But like, again, like with all that, all the build up, all the weird convoluted story, when you finally get to the point where Curry like looks into the camera, you're like, fuck me. There's something creepy about it. And that will probably never go away.
Agreed.
Which is why I dig this movie.
Yeah. So, do you think the movie being a miniseries, like being separated into two parts, helped or hurt it overall?
I think nowadays it helps.
Really? I think nowadays it hurts it.
No, because they would have had to cut more. I think it being a miniseries makes it more like, makes people think about it. Like, wait, if it's a miniseries, then that's not common, so maybe I should watch it.
I think, and I also am kind of biased because mine is evidence-based, but part two of it performed significantly worse than part one.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And I think, we're also talking like hundreds of millions of dollars. Like, it still made back its budget and then some. Like,
mm-hmm.
So I'm not like, you know, like the remakes did very, very well. So
yeah, exactly.
I'm not going to totally shit on those because I actually did very, very much enjoy those movies. I'm more thinking of like, we have horrible attention spans in 2020.
No, that's a good point.
And 2019, and 2017, mm-hmm. and 18, and 17, and so on and so forth. But, like, the last, like, I don't know, 5 to 10 years, like, our attention spans are just slowly dwindling.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I had a hard time watching this, and it was 3 hours in one sitting, and I was like, this is torture.
Oh, I split it in half.
I should have, but, like, I just didn't have time, because, again, mm-hmm. I'm an idiot. Who procrastinates? But, like, yeah, I should have. But, yeah, I think it being split over two nights, like, especially it being on the 18th and then it being on the 20th of November in this case, and then in the 90s, helped it significantly because then it gave people something to look forward to.
Yeah.
In like a 2-day event, blah, 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 mm-hmm. blah, you know?
And it's a Stephen King adaptation
exactly.
on TV.
Exactly. And then, so then it gives people the option to watch it for free.
Yep.
Because this
yep.
was the way, I mean, obviously, you know, before premium cable.
Oh my gosh. But I mean, also I think the designation as a miniseries means that if you're going to go out of your way to watch it, you have to really dedicate and put some time over. So you're going to be more focused on overall what this movie is. And it could deliver, it
yeah.
could not. But I think because of that need to put more attention into it, when Pennywise hits and it gets scary, that's what you're going to remember.
Yeah, I think it definitely helped with the establishment of it as like a pop culture
yeah,
establishment. Because people
yeah.
like are familiar with Derry or like, you know, are familiar with like the characters. Like there
mm-hmm.
are people who actively...
they kind of resonate with these
scenes.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, like they like, you know, quote, to use the parlance of the day, like they stan
yeah.
the characters, you know? But like... The actually, and I think the miniseries helped kind of establish the base for those characters and kind of give people something to relate to. And I think having the miniseries helped do that.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it kind of does us a disservice now watching it. Because again, it's just so fucking long. It's
it
hard
is.
To
yeah,
get through.
It is. That's true.
But I think at the time it definitely helped.
Mm-hmm.
I do also think that you see the same thing in part one and part two of the remake. Because we had to wait like a year and a half between them, or like 2 years.
Yes. That's, you know what? It's kind of interesting too. They switched their format. The first movie was a straight story. And the second movie was a flashback, flash forward, flashback.
No.
Yeah.
No, I don't...
The in 2017 one was a straight... They
it
didn't...
was just the kids.
Yes.
And then in the second one, I thought it was just the adults. Or am I completely on crack?
No, they go back and forth in the second one.
Do they?
They do a lot of kid scenes.
Am I totally... like?
You're tripping.
Okay.
They had to CG Finn Wolfhart younger.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I do... okay, you're right.
Yes.
You're right. I'm wrong. You're
right. They switched the formats, though.
They did.
Because in the first one, they obviously had to go back and forth, and in the second
they went back
one,
and forth.
Straight.
They went back and forth in the beginning,
mm-hmm.
and then they played it straight at the end. And
exactly.
And then they did the opposite. Because everyone liked the kids better.
Yeah.
Everyone liked the kids better.
They were better kids, yeah.
Everyone liked the kids better in the fucking miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, we're going to play up on that. And also, the kids were significantly better in the remake as well. But
oh,
that is a conversation
for, a different
for
day.
Another
for a different
day.
Day. Exactly.
So, would you change anything about this about the miniseries?
I would, but I wouldn't know what to change. Like, be honest with you.
Other than just like keep Tim Curry exactly
keep
the same.
Keep Tim Curry and Seth Green. Recast everybody else.
No, and not Emily Perkins.
Not Emily Perkins. You're right. And then do something about the second. You know, I guess there's a lot of problems I think with the second half, and you could do a better movie. But it's also like, I wouldn't know how. I was born not around the time where I can properly assess how to make a good movie out of that. I don't know. It's
yeah. So honestly, I don't know what I would change either.
Right?
I mean, ultimately, like in broad strokes, I would change the writing. And I would change the adult cast, except
completely.
For Mr. Ritter.
I keep Tim Reed also.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tim Reed. He'd be the same. Him and Ritter.
Yeah.
He was a black guy. For his name.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay, yeah, agreed. So for our final question,
mm-hmm.
what would you rank this movie out of 5 newspaper boats sealed with paraffin wax?
Out of 5 newspaper boats sealed with paraffin wax. Fuck, it's hard. It's really hard to say. I want to say... It's not like a good movie, so it's hard for me to like give it
just,
like a high rating.
Just rank it from your heart.
3.2. I'll give it a 3. I'm gonna say Curry elevates it. There's something iconic about it, but if you look at the movie from like a qualitative perspective,
yeah.
not great.
I'm gonna give it a 2.75.
Okay, good. See, we can't see. I like how we both can't quite give it like a finite number. We're like, let's just.
I'm gonna give it a slightly above normal, but only because of Tim Curry.
Oh, that's right. 2.75 is right above down the middle. I think you know what. 3.2 is a little generous.
Gonna give it a 2.75.
I'm gonna give it a 2.90.
right.
That is dramatic
it's
as hell.
It's not quite a three. No, is it a three? No, I don't know. Hard to say.
All right, fair enough.
I'm a little tough on this one. Yeah.
I mean, it's hard because like nostalgia goggles are very, very real.
Exactly.
And I think this makes it hard to give it a fair rating. Mm-hmm. I think that goes to show with all of the other people who like were giving it ratings on like Letterboxd because everyone was like, everyone was like, I know I'm giving this a rating because of its relevance to like my childhood.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that's kind of nice that everyone is like very aware that they're like, I know this isn't a great movie, but also it was very influential to my childhood.
And it made clowns scary.
Totally.
I mean, in the natural pop culture, like think about it. Yeah. Pop culture
in
has changed
like
because
in
of
the
this
Americana
movie.
Like
yeah.
Landscape for sure. Yeah.
Man, it's so weird. Okay. Yeah. Tough one. Tough one to do.
All right, I think that's it. Do you have anything else you would like to add or talk about?
Thanks for sticking with us. Season 3 premiere here, guys.
It was a bit of a cluster, but that's all right.
That's great. You know, we're a little boozy. It's fine. next week, what do we go? we're going to the year 2000 for next week. We're skipping ahead a decade.
What a difference 10 years makes.
Oh, my God. Huge. I just watched them. I watched them both back to back. That is a huge difference.
Maybe I'll watch it tonight.
You should. Yes, they should. So next, we're actually going to talk about another filmmaker, too, that had a good era in horror as well. Good old Asian American one, too. but it's not a foreign movie. It's not.
It is staunchly American.
Staunchly American. Staunchly place your fears. I would actually say it's pretty scary in a lot of bits.
It plays on a lot of anxieties a lot of people have.
Definitely. Oh, I can't wait to do it. Okay, but,
so that's all your hints. Mm-hmm. That was Stephen King's It from 1990, directed by Tommy Lee Wallace. Thank you, everyone, for joining us for the Season 3 premiere of the Horrible People's Podcast. The fact that we even have a Season 3 is fucking mind-boggling.
I just like hearing the word Season 3 premiere. I'm like, yeah, fuck yeah. Hell yeah, we're doing it again.
Season 3 premiere.
Oh, my God, please.
But, we're very, very excited. We have, I think, up to, like, December planned out at this point.
We absolutely do.
Yeah, we have a lot of really, really awesome films planned out. We're very excited to cover them. We have some cool guests lined up. We have awesome shit coming down the pipe.
September's gonna get weird. It's a weird month, really weird compared to the last two Septembers.
Yes. Well, because the last September, well, no, because like...
Last September was sequel September.
No, last September was sequel September, and then we launched in October
exactly.
of the year before.
Exactly, with like
so
our whole podcast
this,
format
exactly,
style. Yeah.
Exactly. So this will be, I think this will be a fun month.
This one's so off the wall compared to those last two Septembers.
No, like, this is technically our second September.
Oh, right. Compared to the last two premiere months. There we go. That's what I'm thinking.
But no, it'll be a great time. We're very excited to have you along for the ride. If you liked what you heard, please give us a 5-star rating and write us a review on iTunes. It does mean the world to us, and I literally check it like a couple times a week. It's awesome. And
yes.
You guys are totally fucking awesome for doing it. Please, if you want to, like, hit us up or, like, keep in contact with us, find us on social media. The Horrible People's Podcast is on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Horror People Pod. And then you can find us on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast, which is HORRORVLE People's Podcast. And that's where we, you know, stay up to date and post all of the latest and greatest going on with us. If you want to find Anthony, he's on Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler. And then you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop.
That's right.
So that's where you can find us. Please, if you liked the episode, give us a shout. We love getting your guys' feedback. We get them pretty often about one particular episode, which I won't quote right now. But if you have a correction, we're also open to those. Unless it's about Carrie. We know.
Yes, we get it. So, oh my God.
For the rest of our lives, we know.
Well, actually.
I'm sorry.
Okay?
Sorry.
Thank you for listening.
But yes, thank you so much, everyone, for listening. And we're very excited for Season 3. We also have some really cool fucking projects coming down. And we will announce those once they're fucking done.
Yeah, precisely.
But yes, okay, awesome. Thank you so much, guys, for listening. And until next week, don't follow creepy clowns.
Yeah. Watch out for balloons.
Bye.
Peace.